Alleluia.
The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Jesus said to the apostles, "Who among you would say to your servant who has just come in from plowing or tending sheep in the field, 'Come here immediately and take your place at table'? Would he not rather say to him, 'Prepare something for me to eat. Put on your apron and wait on me when I eat and drink. You may eat and drink when I'm finished.' Is he grateful to that servant because he did what was commanded? So should it be with you. When you have done all you have commanded, say, 'We are unprofitable servants. We have done what we are obliged to do.'" The Gospel of the Lord. With a possible exception of the parable of the dishonest steward, in which it seems on the surface that Jesus is praising somebody for duplicity when he's doing something different, today's passage in the Gospel, I think, is the most misunderstood and the most misapplied, especially for those of us who are hard workers. It particularly is painful. So after you've been working the entire day under the sun, plowing ain't easy. It's not like you're at the driving a tractor. You're pushing a tractor, tending sheep in the field. Soon as after a long day you come on in, it seems that the Lord is saying, "Put on your apron and keep working. And even though you've worked yourself up a ferocious appetite out there, I don't care. Keep serving on me, and when I'm done, you can care for yourself." That's what it seems to be saying. And then it's totally contrary to the modern school of affirmation that everybody wants to believe that they deserve a pat on the back for everything. And instead of a pat on the back for many hours out there working to make the master some moolah, it seems that Jesus is saying, look at yourself simply as an unprofitable servant, a slave, the point of whose life is simply to do exactly what you're told with no credit or thanks. It's not what he's saying. This passage goes along with what we heard yesterday. It's a passage precisely about perseverance in faith, perseverance in setting good example, perseverance in mercy. Yesterday, Jesus talked about scandals and not to set it. It would be better if a millstone were tied around our neck and were tossed into the depth of the sea. But immediately thereafter, even for those who set scandals, Jesus says, if someone repents, rebuke him. Sorry, if your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. And if seven times he says, I'm sorry, seven times forgive. And hearing those two things about the punishment for scandal, as well as about the challenge of perpetual forgiveness, the apostles blurted out, Lord, increase our faith, because they knew they'd need faith. Jesus said, even if you had a mustard seed size faith, you can do this. You could move mountains into the ocean. So don't think that what I have just asked you is impossible. And immediately thereafter, we get the gospel today. Just say what? Don't use fatigue as an excuse not to live scandalously. Don't let fatigue be an excuse that I've already forgiven and I'm just tired of forgiving. Don't let fatigue be an excuse to just stay at your same level of faith rather than constantly respond to God's help to go from mustard seed to mustard tree to something with the extent of which all the birds of the air can come and rest in the branches. So yes, sometimes we do work really hard. But what the Lord wants to prevent, lest we start to create scandal, is for us to think we're entitled to something. Jesus has made us in his image, and what did he tell us? I have come not to be served, but to serve and to lay down my life as a ransom for the many. When we start to think that we're entitled, that when we start to think that it's now time for somebody else to serve us, that's when the scandal can creep in. That's when the lukewarmness can invade with regard to merciful love. And that's when our faith, rather than increasing, can start to get much, much smaller than a mustard seed. Jesus looks at us as far more than unprofitable servants. He said to us in the celebration of the first Mass, I don't call you slaves. I call you friends because I revealed to you everything I have heard from my Father. He doesn't call us unprofitable. He gives us his own mission. He gives us talents. And how proud he is when we come back and not just return 5 for 5 or 2 for 2. But that we return 5,000 for 5 and 100,000 for 1. Because with faith the size of a little mustard seed, that can be the yield. In order to persevere, we need virtues. Virtues are those second natures in us that help us precisely when we're tired to do the right thing. Because virtues are these habits so that we can almost go on autopilot. Because when we weren't on autopilot, we worked very hard to avoid vice and to choose God. And so in the formation of these virtues, even when we're having bad days, even when we don't feel that we've got much strength left, we can still unite ourselves to the Lord in loving him and loving others. So in today's first reading, St. Paul, in only the second of 3 days in 2 years in the letter to Titus, gives us a whole series of virtues directed toward different people, old men, old women, young people, Titus himself. But the virtues themselves are things that every Christian should have. Temperate. We're not going to be addicts. We're living in an addicted age that goes overboard. We need to have that great cardinal virtue of temperance, to have things in their proper order. Dignified. And our dignity comes precisely from our relationship with the Lord, both in our origin as well as in our destiny, that we're made in God's image and we're called to eternal communion. Self-controlled. We don't have to be restrained by others because we have an interior policeman and that we follow our conscience so that we're not wild. Sound in faith, love, and endurance. That we're firm in faith. We're not vacillating every time our emotions change, that we're firm in love, that our commitment towards someone, our capacity to lay down and sacrifice for another, isn't whimsical, but it's persevering, including sometimes when they rebuff and even run away. Firm in endurance. We're going to need that grace. There are going to be lots of temptations along the way, especially early in any new activity, when our knowledge of what we need to do is low, our energy, which was at first high, starts to drop down to a low state. And that's the time most people quit, We've got to be firm in endurance to know that that phase of performance, as the managerial schools will call, inevitably will come. And when it comes, we just go through knowing it's going to get better. Reverent. Being able to give God what he deeply deserves and to be able to notice the dignity in others. Not slanderers, which is when we, as Pope Francis likes to say, slay our brother Abel with our tongue. Not addicted to drink. You know, it's kind of amazing in the early church. Today, I think the vast majority of drunks would be men. When you look in the ancient world, the vast majority of drunks were women, including St. Monica, most famously. But so many women, I think for the most part because they were in unhappy marriages, they weren't given much responsibility, etc., they were more prone to this. But it's something that can impact both men and women, that we become addicted to something or something else. We should be only enslaved to Christ. Teaching what is good. Earlier, St. Paul instructs Titus to say what's consistent with sound doctrine. We can't just know it. We just can't live by it personally. We have to share that extraordinary gift. As Pope Francis says in Evangelii Gaudium, do we really believe the faith? Do we really believe the truth? If we don't want to share this good news with others, how can we keep something so beautiful to ourselves? So that they may train younger women, this is about old women, to love their husbands and children. The older we are, the more we're supposed to be teachers in love. Again, to be self-controlled and chaste. Loving with purity and piety, in other words. Chastity, I'll never cease saying, is when our love goes white, hot, pure. It's not the turning off the flame, which is where so many misunderstandings happen. But it's a love that is incandescent. Good homemakers. How important it is, according to the feminine genius, to be able to make not a house, but a home. A welcoming place in which people feel deeply loved and accepted. Model of good deeds in every respect. Rather than scandalizing, we're supposed to be exemplary. Integrity. That we're whole in our teaching and in our life. We're not partial. One of the biggest diseases today is when people compartmentalize. The devil, obviously, is the divider. He tries to divide us from within. We think if we help out the poor, we've got a pass to commit, for example, any sexual sin we want, or to be loose with our lips, or slanderous with our tongue. Integrity. Sound speech that cannot be criticized. How does our speech become sound? The more and more that it echoes the speech that we hear from Christ and the saints. This is the way our opponents will be put to shame, Titus says. Paul says to Titus, without anything bad to say about us. When our speech is always sound, when they can't provoke us to something unsound. And where do we get the capacity to do all of this? Comes from God. The grace of God has appeared, saving us first, and then training us. Grace of God, God's presence in us as creatures, trains us to reject godless and worldly ways and to live temperately, justly, and devoutly in this age. As we await the blessed hope and the coming of our great God and Lord Jesus Christ. Prayers that we use in every liturgy. That the grace of God appears right here, training us to reject what is not fit for the Lord and to help us to live temperately, justly, ordered toward God and ordered toward what others owe, and with devotion, with a sacred commitment, devoto, in all of this. Because Jesus, who is that appearing grace of the Lord, gave himself to deliver us from lawlessness and cleanse us as a people for himself, eager to do what is good, even when we've been working all day, even when we're hungry, eager to continue to do what is good. Someone who lived by these virtues, someone who continued to work all her days, is the great saint that we celebrate today. Saint Francis Xavier Cabrini couldn't get accepted into a religious community when she was trying to apply after her parents had died. Because they had the criterion that if she were sick in any way, if she wasn't personally healthy, God could not give her a vocation. So many communities rejected a future saint. Eventually, the bishop asked her to take over a failing orphanage in her town of Lodi for 3 years, and she brought together a community of sisters around her precisely to do it. She wasn't able to save it, despite all her hard work and genius and love and care and making it a home. But afterward, the bishop recognized what was really in her heart. And in contrast to the pusillanimity of all those communities that had rejected her, said, "It's clear you have a vocation to be a missionary. No missionary communities exist for women, because everybody thought it was too unsafe. You must found one." And so the sick girl founds one. She had almost drowned when she was a kid, and so she had a tremendous fear of water. She would spend almost the rest of her life on ships, crossing back and forth over the Atlantic as a missionary, bringing her sisters to so many countries. By the time she was dead, she had 50 different congregations, 50 different houses in 8 different countries. But it's now so much more. She was one who was constantly seeking to do the Lord's work at the end of long days. You know the great story here in this city when she arrived off the docks in order to care for the Italian immigrants. I'm convinced that she would have come down here. She had to, in order to serve the Italians who eventually built this parish. St. Francis Xavier Cabrini was serving a group of 50,000 when she arrived, only 1,200 of whom had ever been to a church in the city. There were 12 priests in the city. 10 had been kicked out of their diocese for scandalous behavior. So you can just imagine how desperate the need was. But Archbishop Corrigan, who had written requesting her, when she finally arrived, the benefactress who was going to give the money for the house to start her community here, which would be an orphanage, had reneged and said, "Sister, we have nothing for you here, unfortunately. Go back to Italy." And she, with her beautiful statue right over there in the niche, said, "No, the Holy Father sent me here. And here I will stay." She was able respectfully to put the bishop back in his place. And so it began. She stayed, and her work really flourished here and throughout. She shows us the gift of holy perseverance. Some of us have physical illnesses of one form or another. Don't let it stop you. Sometimes we'll have people who doubt our vocation. Don't let it stop you. They doubted hers. Sometimes the devil's going to tempt us like he tempts everybody to just say, I made an effort. I did what I could. I guess it wasn't meant to be. She shows us how to continue serving all the way to the end. And so, Jesus, in this gospel, helps us not to become presumptuous after we have served faithfully for a day or for a lifetime. But this gospel was a setup, because even though we don't deserve anything, he has promised that those who are faithful, he will sit at table and proceed to wait on them. That's precisely what he did at the Last Supper, taking on the form of a slave to wash us so that we might be prepared for Holy Communion. And that's what he continues to do by prophecy at the celestial banquet, where St. Francis Xavier and all the saints, like Timothy and Titus, now rejoice. Praise be Jesus Christ.